This whole thing started actually about 2011. We had a new mining deposit, new facilities we were going to open up at our Liberty Mine. And we needed to move some used drag lines over there. We didn't want to tear them down and transport them by freight and then rebuild them because it takes too long. And we looked at walking them. And that takes a long time with a lot of dirt work. So a couple of guys that you'll probably see later on, one of them is an old mentor of mine who's since passed away, but they started looking at different ways to do this type of job. And Charlie called some guys up that he knew with Mammut and said, won't you come over here and see if you can put this thing on wheels and get it over to Liberty Mine that way. So we were looking at moving initially just one 8750 Marion drag line. They weigh about 13.5 million pounds. So it was decided that, yeah, we could probably do that. So we were going to end up transporting one and walking the other. The more we looked at it, we said, well, if we're going to transport one, why don't we just go ahead and use the equipment, because most of the cost of that, a lot of the cost of that, of the job is to mobilize the SPMTs and stuff to the job site, the jacks. So we decided to go ahead and move to 8750s. So once we started to agree to move to 8750s, one of other mining operations said, well, why don't you come over here and move a 1350? So we said, well, we got the equipment, why don't you see if we can give us a group discount? So once we decided to move a 1350, another one of our newer mines says, we got a 1570 over here. You guys can just go ahead and tag along and we can move the 1570 too. So we called up Mammut and said, why don't you give us an even bigger group discount? But so we tied up their equipment for all of, let me see, we started 1st of April of last year, 2014, and we finished in the middle or end of August of 2014. Mother Nature wasn't very kind to us, as you'll see pictures of this. So with that said, we'll go ahead and give a little bit of start on this presentation. We'll start out with a 1350. I'm going to give you some statistics and details. We'll entertain some questions later on. But Daniel, let me see if I can go ahead. I got this thing. Okay. This is the first machine that we relocated, the smallest of our machines, which we thought we were very fortunate in the sense that we'd be able to start on a lighter machine and be able to get it moved over. Take what we've learned from moving that one to the next machine, et cetera, until we reach our maximum weight of 6,500 tons on our 8750s. This 1350 at our Big Brown mine, it weighed about 5.5 million pounds. We had to move it about 3.5 miles, and it used 120 axle lines of self-propelled motorized modular transports. It took about 10 days to mobilize and to load the equipment. So mobilization, it wasn't just arriving to the loading site. They showed up with, I think we looked at 20 truckloads a day for 3 days of equipment that they had to assemble and make sure everything was connected before we could jack the machine up. So that's the job site where the machine is about ready to be lifted. So it took just 2 days to transport. We had very good roads at the Big Brown location. We were on regular haul road, so we didn't have any critical subgrade issues. 2 days to transport it and about 4 days to unload and then demobilize it. Along with what we had to do for the actual transport, we had a mechanical contractor, Warfab, who supported the effort in making preparations for the jack installation. Prior to doing all the planning for the work, there were a lot of field visits and trying to figure out the location of the jacks. A lot of engineering went into trying to move air pipelines, lube lines, cable returns for shoes, shoe bumpers, whatever in the world was in the way, we had to get it out of the way so we could install our jacks so they could jack on a level surface. So there was a lot of that went into each one of these in preparation for each one of these moves on each of the four machines. The only obstructions that we had on this short 3.3 miles was we had a 345 kV high voltage overhead line that we had to lower. And that only took, all we had to do was call up the utility, they lowered the line, we went underneath, they reconnected it so it was less than 8 hours of being out of service, they just rerouted the power. We had about 150 foot box culvert, concrete box culvert, low water bridge. We were not overly concerned with, but you're always kind of worried about something like this. If you've never done it before, you're just concerned that, you know, some one of those pipes might not hold up. We had a multi-plate superspan bridge that you'll see in a video later on, and three overhead distribution lines, internal to Luminant. Now, as you would probably expect, everything went great except for the lines that we had to do. So they were a little bit delayed, but eventually got everything taken care of, and we were able to move the machine over there pretty quickly. So Mother Nature was kind to us on the big brown move. And we just, once we unloaded the equipment on the other end of the transport location, we transferred all that equipment over to our Kasi mine, which was about 45 miles from this mine. So all the trucks and everything just demobbed from here and moved to Kasi. This is the 1570 at Kasi. As you can see, it's a little bit bigger. I don't know if you can see because these pictures are kind of distorted, but this one started. I was just telling the gentleman out in the hallway, this machine, we began rolling it a year ago today. So last year today, we were out there rolling this machine. It's a little bit heavier, 7.5 million pounds. Transport distance was 6.7 miles. We used 150 axle lines of self-propelled modular transports. Approximately 7 days to mobilize and load, 3.5 days to transport it, and 3 days to unload and demo. The obstructions that we had were another 345 kV high voltage overhead line. We had a State Highway 7, which is a very busy state highway, at grade crossing that we were able to navigate without any trouble at all. Just put some steel plate down, and there'll be a video, you'll be able to see some of this. And two overhead distribution lines. And we had some miscellaneous internal corrugated culverts that people were concerned with. We also, in addition to moving each of these drag lines, we moved the shoes. We had to remove the shoes for each of the moves and move them separately. We also moved switch gear substations for the 8750s, but not necessarily for the two smaller machines. They were handled separately. We didn't have to transport those. On the at-grade crossing, by the way, on State Highway 7, it got a lot of attention. So as we're trying to control traffic, I saw the same vehicles going down, taking a loop, come back, waiting to be the first in line so they could sit there and watch the machine go across the highway. So they weren't upset about having to watch this thing. These are the big ones. These are the, this is the Marion 8750. We moved both of them, two of them. One we moved 13 miles, we moved it 15 miles, we moved it first, and the second one we moved 8 miles. So once we moved this machine over to where it needed to be offloaded, we had to take all the equipment, move it back to the next loading facility, next loading pad, and then load the drag line up, and then take it over to the same general mine area and offload it. So there was a great deal of logistics in getting all that equipment from one place to the other back again and then to its final resting place. Each of these machines weigh about 13 million pounds. We used twice as many axle lines on this machine, these two big machines, as we did on the small ones, 240 axle lines. The first one, like I said, 15 miles, 11 days to mobilize and load the first 8750. The amount of equipment to move this machine was nearly double one of the smaller machines. It's just more jacks, more beams, more softeners, more everything else. Cribbing. 4 days to unload and 15 days to transport. 4 days to unload and demob to Delta 32. Delta 32 was the second drag line. The 15 days to transport is a little misrepresentative in that, as I said earlier, Mother Nature was brutal. We had 22 days of rain in a 25-day schedule. So we had a lot of delay and had to work around. Those guys worked their rear ends off, crawling in and under these machines, digging their way out, changing tires, and working with this mud. So it was not a lot of fun. The second move was about 8 miles, 3 days to mobilize and load it, 4 days to transport it, 6 days to unload and demob. The obstructions and things that we had to worry about, we had 35 natural gas pipelines to make sure that they had sufficient cover to be able to handle what was coming across them. Some of them were completely de-energized while we moved the machines. We had 12 overhead power lines, 4 railroad crossings, 7 county roads and FM crossings. 6 of those were at grades. So we had a lot of preparation. This was the most, these two moves were the most complicated ones that we had. There was a lot of dirt work, a lot of opportunity for failure, a lot of coordination with construction, and trying to make sure that the whole effort was supported well. This video coming up here, I hope it comes up. Here it comes. I turned the sound off on it. It's an internal propaganda, so you all don't need to listen to all that. But this is some of the video you can see, and he's going to stop it right here. Okay, right there. Thank you very much, Daniel. This is the Beckville mine where the machines were in the deposit that was playing out. The machine was going to go all the way across here, down around here, back on the top of the back end of our power plant lake, which this area of the lake hadn't had any water in it for 10 years. It was dry. The lake was 10 feet down. We decided, yeah, all we got to do is build a little road across there and do a little dirt work and we'll be cool. So we come across here, come around over here, and get to our facility. Well, the mine's right there. And this is the 15 mile. The other drag line, if I can get this, I think it started out right here, the second one did. So by the time we got to it, we'd already moved that, the one the longest. All the haul road, all the road from here to about right here had already been built. It had already been constructed, so it didn't have to be reclaimed. However, all the road from about right in here over to the mine had to be reclaimed. So it was a temporary, all the structures were temporary. So we had additional costs there. And not to mention additional effort. It was all brand new road, and we did our level best, of course, to make sure the grade was what it was supposed to be. The acceptable grade for our design parameters was plus or minus 5% on vertical grade. However, you couldn't have a transitional vertical curve any more than 2 feet difference to accommodate the length of the SPMT train. If your middle was low and your tires bottomed out and your ends were high and they bottomed out, it's not a good thing. It just wouldn't look good stuck there in the middle of the road. So anyway, that's kind of where we are there. Okay, Daniel, if you can get this thing started again. And this is where we crossed our state highway. This is all the steel plate that was located out there. The machines we had some push blocks installed to assist going up a steep grade. That's our steepest grade right there that we had on the whole project. That's right at 5% exactly. And that's one of the project managers, Frank. He was one of the original planners on the whole project. That's our second machine that we had to load, Delta 32. And you can see what we're kind of dealing with as far as the terrain there. So once that pad site was done, we had to go back and load it out. The spacing of the plates helped out a lot as far as speed goes. We did a lot of transport without any plate at all. But on the newer stuff, with all the rain we were getting, it just had a hard time holding up. We didn't move during night. We only moved the drag lines during the day, just to be able to facilitate making sure we were traveling on good dirt and facilitate tire changes. We had a lot of tire. There's the multiplate structure we were looking at. We had a lot of tire changes. They're air tires, pneumatic tires. So it was a lot of work. There we're taking the shoes off, and there's some of the Mammut guys running the fork trucks, moving the plate around. They moved around the plate once it was in front of the drag line. Of course, the drag line would come across it. They'd go to the back, put the plate up again, move it around to the front. So it was a nonstop ordeal. That's 3/16 inch plate, 8x15, I believe. And we had a lot of it because we had a lot of rain. So that's some of our new operation there at the Liberty Mine. We used both those 8750s there to start the box cut, begin the mining. And of course, once the deposit's over, as you all are very familiar with the mining industry, you have the reclamation to do. And that's always a big piece. So drag line's finishing up the last few pits. We're fixing to move another 8750 this summer. For the next 2 years, we're gonna tear it down and freight it over and then re-erect it. This is the little idea of what we were working with. Size does matter in what we're dealing with. The 1350, if you add it to the weight of the 1570, put it on piggyback, that would equal 1 8750. So that kind of gives you an idea of what dimensions we're looking at. The 8750 tub is 80 feet wide, and able to be able to move this thing, we used up the width of nearly an entire haul road. So we had our obstacles to get by. This is some of the engineering work that was done by Mammut in the preparation. Each of the machines was designed specifically for that machine, each of the jacking plan. This is for the 1350. We had jacking pads and jacks installed on both, underneath both propel sections. Of course, the propel sections are originally designed by the OEM to carry the full weight of the machine, so we figured that would be the best and safest place to put that. We just wanted to make sure by visual inspection and by UT inspection that the structural integrity of those propel sections were still intact. They did a pretty good job. Whenever we did find cracking, we repaired the cracks. They fabricated two jacking mechanisms in the front of the tub. That's the direction of the boom. And then, of course, we had two jack stands and jacks back here in the back. And that was more for anything else under the fantail for stability. But each of the machines had a specific plan for it. This is all the CG calculations, trying to figure out the actual placement of jacks, where the trailers go, et cetera, et cetera. This is a little bit of an idea of how it was placed. The jacking pads had to be buried in the jacking mats, had to be buried into the pad to be able to get the proper clearance for the equipment and the beams to jack the machine up. So you can see right in there, that's below grade. These mats on the back are at grade. This is the fabricated mechanism. You can kind of get an idea of the scale. That's a real person standing there trying to give you an idea. This is the front of the machine. Again, the buried jacking pads and mats. Once the machine's up in the air, we did back in the previous slide, before we do a full lift, we have a test lift and leave it there overnight to make sure that the machine doesn't settle. So if we didn't get any settling in the lifting process overnight, then we thought we'd be safe enough to go ahead and raise the machine totally up. On the smaller machines, we only had to go up about 5.5 feet to be able to load them, but on the big machines, we had to go up a total of 8 feet because we had to spread the load through some beams around the full length of the trailers. But as you can see, it gets it up in the air pretty high. Right side of the machine, we'll take one set of jacks. We put the center set of SPMTs in, remove, then we get ready to move the one side of the jacking and the other and get ready to put the right and then the left side in or vice versa. We got the right side in. The jacks, once we get all of the SPMTs in place, then we actually take the load. They took the load with the SPMTs, raised the machine up, and saw how things checked, everything checked out, and then they go ahead and are ready to load this thing. This is some animation. You guys will be able to see how the loading process worked. A lot of our prep time was done on the construction of the pads, making sure that the jacking pits were located properly and engineered so they wouldn't settle and crush. Of course, we had problems with them filling up with water. So as you can see, those jacking mats are in place. We walk up on the mats. We take the shoes off. Did the other preparatory washing of stuff off the undersurface. They come in and place the jacks, the beams. And this jacking method is very cool, using icky wood, which is some really, really hard stuff. Those jacking rams didn't even dent the wood. But they go up right at 4 inches every lift. It's a completely level lift. There's no putting in shims and telling the right side to lift up and the left side to hold. It all goes up at once. It's all run by one individual. It's done very safely, very controlled. And it looks a lot like that, just not quite as fast. Looks like a big Jenga set. Here comes the first center section. All those SPMTs are put together modularly, as the name says, on site. Those are all put together and are controlled by remote control. First set of jacks, front and back, are removed. Slide the stuff in there. Other jacks are removed, your last set goes in, and up we go. Once the load's taken, we can go ahead and just drive it off. And then take that other stuff to where you're gonna offload it. On the first two machines, the tub's set directly onto the SPMT surface. And the load was distributed that way. But on the last two machines, we had, because they had grousers, and because we needed to spread the weight out, we had to set the tub on beams. These are some of the mats that were installed and for the jacking of the 1315. What I'm trying to show you here is the difference in the amount of equipment and prep work that we had to do for each of these. This is the 8750. We had to, in order to take the shoes off of the 8750s, we had to dig out 12 inches so we could get the knuckle to clear to pull the shoe off. But after doing that, then we had, instead of backfilling it with dirt, we just put some 12-inch mats in there. As you can see, these are the supports underneath the fantail for the 1350. It's kind of short, not a whole lot of room in there. And then as we go over here, you can see the distance is significantly increased just because of the size of the machine. We located each of these jacking points at a cross structural section underneath the fantail. We also, our mechanical contractor, also tied the revolving frame to the tub using some beam sections so we have anti-rotation. We didn't want the wind or the boom or whatever to start trying to turn the machine. So, and we didn't want there to be any opportunity for load slop, so we ended up tying the revolving frame to the tub in two areas in front, two places in front, and then two places in back. These are the fabricated jack brackets that they put together. As the machine size and weight increased, so did the numbers of jacks, of course. One big box beam for the small ones, and two over here. The first machine, we didn't tie the beam to the propel girders, and they had it all to be installed again at the teardown location. By the time we got to this machine, we tied the 30-inch box beams or to the revolving frame to the propel sections with chains and D-rings. So we could carry that with us. It did increase the weight of the machine, but it was very, very quick unloading. And you can see on the 8750s, it's just a whole bunch more equipment underneath there to get that dude up in the air. We took the bucket and the ropes off of the 8750s. The reason that's significant is that changes your center of gravity. So if you don't plan on that and somebody just so happens in the middle of the night comes in there, operations, takes the bucket and the ropes off, you got to do some recalculation. So we had the bucket and the ropes off of the 8750s. We left it on the 1570 and the 1350. You tie the hoist and the drag together with your rigging, your bucket rigging. Each of these motors are 600 horsepower. You can tell here underneath this fantail how much support is required. The Marion fantails stick way up in the air anyway, but there's just a lot of work going in there to make sure that's a stable support for that fantail. You don't want the load shifting or moving around on you whatsoever. Just a different look on what we're doing during transport. This was the first machine, first 8750 that we moved. We had them pre-assemble the trailers and the support for the fantail down at the bottom of the hill. This is all newly constructed walkway road for them to come up here and start loading. And this is where that sets in preparation to pull that underneath the 8750. Here's some of the opportunities we had. I kind of pointed out earlier. There's the box culverts, the multiplay structure. That's one of the first areas they kind of got stuck there. But they're not stuck for long. They hop on it and got her done. This right here is just awful. There's about 2 feet to 3 feet of nasty mud squishing up underneath there. And we were actually down for about 7 days trying to get that mud dried up and the road in front of them rebuilt. This is the steepest grade that we had on any one of the transports. That's exactly a 5% grade, and that is our first 8750 that went across there. It's really, you can really tell the grade there. Covering the farm to market road, making sure we had a time limit that the state was allowed for us to be able to close that road. We were able to get an extension because we did have so much rain, but once we got it covered up, we had to get that stuff back out of there. And you can see the rain that we had, it just kept coming down, never giving us a break. And you got little obstacles like this, that I know that doesn't look like much, but that little guy almost cost us a couple hours in trying to be able to get somebody over there to move it all out of the way. But we just cleared it by a little bit. A lot of flexibility in the movement of the SPMTs themselves, but you only got so much haul road you can deal with. You don't run it off the side because there's a lot of slop on the side of your road. And there's a little load sign there for the FM row. We kind of exceeded that. And this is the area, this is the area of the lake that I was telling you about that was dry for 10 years. In October of 2013, it started raining, and it didn't stop. And the lake completely filled up to pool elevation. That whole area filled up with water. we had to build a little berm cofferdam, bridge it over, and we actually put soil cement blended in with the dirt to make sure that that boy right there didn't sink into the lake. So we were lucky, and that worked out very, very well. This was some of the area that we had to clear and get all this slop out of here too. That's just a really, really nasty piece of road we had to work with. This is the very last obstacle we had on the very last move on the very last day of the last job. And you can see that the barriers on both sides are high for our haul trucks. And we weren't worried about the loading, because actual loading on all of our structures was governed by our loaded haul trucks. And it wasn't governed by the weight and the movement of these operations. But as you can see, we're all ready to go and everything's looking great, and all of a sudden Lee stands up there and he goes, "Is that ladder gonna clear?" And it did, just by a couple inches. So we're all sitting there going, "We gotta stop for an hour to cut this ladder off." But Lee, the guy that you saw standing there, I think he's 6'8". And they had a couple more guys on site that were 6'7" and 6'8". So when they first got there, I thought that they were going to move the machine just by hand. But they didn't have to. Here's some of the lessons learned. We really, after we got the job working and got it completed, we really didn't have any cons. We had Mother Nature worked against us, but she can't be considered to be a con. She's going to do that. If you've ever moved drag lines, walking them, or doing anything, and if you're in the mining business, you know that Mother Nature's gonna beat on you every once in a while. But the loading and unloading pad areas required much more area than what we had originally expected. So if you're gonna do this, more equipment staging than expected. We had 20 loads per day for about 3 days. Mob and demob dollars are significant, so if you're gonna have them come up here to move one, might as well have them move four. Walkway, subgrade, and service prep is very important. Removal of the bucket and rope keeps the rope linked together. Adjust your CG calculations. Removal of the tub grousers. Those can become, I don't know if you guys, any of you have grousers, anti-spin grousers on the bottom of your tubs, but if you do and you're gonna do this, you gotta take them off, because they don't want point loading on the tub. You gotta take those off and then put them back on. They can mess your critical path up. Support required diesel fuel supply. We had to fuel both ends of the trailers on their diesel engines. The water trucks to keep dust suppression down, even though it did rain, once we got it dry, it was dusty. Flat tires. We had lots of flat tires, which we're gonna have on something like that. They heat up, and when you got variations in your subsurface conditions, it causes trouble. And of course, lots of steel plate. Lots of that little 3/16 inch plate did a heck of a job. And those guys move it around very, very quickly. The absolute pros, you got much less dirt work dollars for dragline walkway construction. You can build it narrower for your SPMT transport locations. And it's even less dollars. It even dollars out better if you don't have to reclaim what you're building. The engineer jacking method is very fast and safe. One of my colleagues at Peabody moved one where they walked the drag line up on a dirt ramp and cribbing, and then they excavated the cribbing and the dirt out from underneath the machine and backed the trailers up underneath that. We liked the jacking method a lot better because it was very controlled and very safe and gave us a lot more faith and stability in what we were doing. Your haul road crown is not destroyed. If you're going to walk a drag line down your haul road, it takes the crown right out of it, and it destroys your haul road. You never seem to be able to get that haul road back in the original condition for your haulers. It just kills them. But this method, pretty easy. Not to mention, there's no wear and tear on the propelled gearing for the deadhead. On the longer moves, you don't have to move, nor do you have to move trail cable. On a 15-mile move across the lake, around the lake, moving trail cable just presents a whole different effort in itself. So all we got to do is take it off, take the trail cable out when we're jacking it up, and put it back on, reinstall it when we get it on the other end.
It's faster and approximately two-thirds the cost of walking, or less, depending on distance and opportunities that you have and relocations and construction. We really, even though we did have some issues with the weather and the schedule on the 8750s, we still came out dollars ahead. If you have a smaller machine, the two smaller machines that went very quickly on shorter moves, they were really great. This is the crew. They really did a, we only had one smashed thumb. One of the truckers lost his thumbnail working with a fork truck operator. But other than that, not a single safety issue. These guys did a wonderful job, and I don't think we're going to be doing this again anytime soon, though. I think we got three drag lines for sale. If you guys want to buy a drag line? None of these yet. We didn't, by the way, MSHA did not show up at any of the four dragline moves, and they didn't show up out at Peabody Coal in New Mexico either. So they don't come around when we're moving these. It was kind of nice. Any questions? By the way, Mr. Hammack, a couple guys from Mammut are sitting here in the audience, so... They've been giving me the eyeball up here, making sure I did good. Yes.
What is the alternative if you do this?
Tear them down. It depends on the distance. You got a distance balancer there, but the time that you have to take when you tear one down and rebuild it. An 8750 would take about 20 months. About 20 months to tear one down. Matter of fact, we're starting a tear down of an 8750. We've got to move 170 miles. We're starting it in about 3 months.
Okay.
So, but if you can walk it, we could have walked the machines over there. But you have to build a much wider walkway, and then your issues with your propelled gear sections, and then, of course, your girders and your gearing and things, and then, of course, moving your trail cable. It was much less expensive. Yes.
Okay. But if you put the production that you probably gain.
Exactly right. It was in the dirt faster. We didn't have to worry about any mechanical overhauls or anything, or a breakdown while we were walking it, which would have been crazy trying to support that. Anyone else? Thank you very much. I sure appreciate it.
Thanks, Brad. Thanks for making the trip out.